Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Greetings from the hill country of Central Texas. This is the Revolution in Military Affairs podcast. We know that there are many podcasts competing for your time. We hope to bring you the content and guests to be your go-to podcast for the study of war, warfare, and strategy.
Okay, welcome back to the Revolution in Military Affairs podcast. Excited today, we've got Mauro Gili on the podcast. He is a senior researcher at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Zurich. Did I get that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you for coming on the podcast today.
Well, thanks for your invitation.
So Mauro is widely published in many terrific journals and highly active in the ongoing debate on the importance of drones in current and future warfare and war. And so we're going to get real deep in that discussion today because that's one of my favorite discussions. And so a couple of papers that he's co-authored that we're going to talk through today as kind of guideposts for just the conversation on drones and drone warfare and drone usage in wars today. So we're going to talk why drones have not revolutionized wars today. And we're also going to talk, will the drone always get through, which I love that that play on the old, will the bomber always get through theory from the 1930s. And that was published in Internet or in Security Studies in 2022. So those two things we're going to discuss. Let me get that title correct again. Will the drone always get through, offensive myths and defensive realities? Because that's important, because that really ties into the argument. So we're going to discuss those two papers today as we talk about drones and drone warfare in contemporary conflict and then how it plays out through the future of warfare. And so I think I'm just going to kind of open up here with a couple of comments, couple questions, and then I'll toss it over to Mauro to just get going here on the topic. And so I think there's really...
Sorry to disappoint you. That's actually how some older papers on the literature, which is called, in fact, offensive and balanced, they would use the acronym to discuss it. So we just use the acronym.
Other people use,
but you know, maybe the other people were playing this.
I thought there was like a Wu-Tang Clan tie in there.
some people might have done it. Sorry, it wasn't us. So sorry to disappoint you.
No, it's all good. Every time I look at that in there, I just think that ODB. I'm like, okay, well, clearly they're trying. Because, you know, you had that, will the bomber always get through tie in there. So I didn't know if there's a couple of interwoven, you know, themes throughout the paper that you were trying to get. Now that we got that out of the way, I'm going to read a couple passages here and then I'm going to kick it over to you. So you're right. With regard to current generation drones, we find that they do not yield an offensive advantage against current generation air defense systems. Current generation drones possess features that are effective against only some but not all current generation ground and airborne systems and sensors, and therefore will not successfully systematically against countries that possess state-of-the-art air defenses, that is, against integrated air defense systems. And I think that this idea that I just laid out here, essentially that they don't really possess an offensive advantage, that transcends both those papers. You know, would you care to elaborate on that idea there?
Sure, absolutely. So the paper started because across many publications, both by academics, policymakers, journalists, one recurrent claim we came across was that drones, and when we talk about drones, let me specify, in our two papers, we look only at medium altitude and high altitude long endurance drones. So these are the two categories we look at. So when reading about this type of drone, so the type of the Reaper, the Predator, the TB2, or the Global Hawk. So when reading about these two type of drones, we would often find claims such that they are difficult to detect by modern air defense systems or by radars, that are kind of difficult to detect them. And so we started by asking, is that correct? Because all these people took this claim at face value without investigating whether it was in fact factually correct. And well, what we discovered by taking textbooks in radar engineering, radar operations, air defense systems, was that these claims do not have any support. So the types of arguments are generally three. That is one, that these drones are small, and therefore they are small objects, and the radars are not going to see them, or that these drones fly at low altitude, and therefore are kind of fly below the radar, or that they are slow, and therefore by flying slowly radars are not going to see them. And in fact, these claims are either incorrect, but it is that these drones are small, it's rather indifferent. First of all, they are not small. I mean,
the Reaper, a male drone is not small.
Yeah, the Reaper has like the wingspan is like, I think, 22 meters. Like, this is pretty huge.
Right.
But we say, even if you think that somehow like the body is lean and therefore small, even if you saw that is the case, it is indifferent. So that is, first of all, that the size of an object does not play any role in radar detection. What matters is the kind of the ratio between the size of an object and the wavelength of the illuminating radar pulse. And save for really, really, really small objects. So when kind of the ratio, like the object is about 1/10 of the wavelength, the size is rather irrelevant. Like radar bands at different frequencies are going to eliminate small birds, leaves, type of, and in fact, it's most of the time, it's actually a problem for radars that they pick up way too much stuff that they need to. For the other two claims, that they fly at low altitude or that they fly slow, kind of the claim is in absolute sense is correct. The problem is that drones do not add any capability that other systems don't already have. Mm-hmm. So flying at low altitude is something that has been done since World War II. It's the metaphor that in English language we have, flying below the radar, captures this idea that by flying a very low altitude, you essentially postpone the moment of detection. This is correct, but many aircraft can do it. The B-1 mm-hmm. was developed with this very point in mind. The key aspect is that this approach to postpone the moment of detection is effective only against ground-based radars. Is not effective against airborne radars, and therefore, again, so this is nothing new that only drones have, and regardless, is only effective against ground-based radars. And the last point, that they fly very slowly, therefore they cannot be detected. So this, the idea behind this is correct, namely that because of the very point I made earlier, that these radars pick up a lot of stuff, actually too much stuff. Radar systems have filters that allow them to ignore stuff that is very unlikely a threat, and therefore something that flies at very low speed is going to be automatically ignored because it's unlikely to be a threat. But of course, this filter can be changed. So like any static object is often ignored because by definition, a static object cannot be an incoming threat. But again, you can change the filter so as to modulate what you can see and what you cannot see. So just the moment you change the filter, anything more moving more slowly is going to be detected. So this is the kind of concise summary of the finding we have with regard to modern, the effect of mail and hail drones towards modern air defense system.
You write that drones don't actually yield an offensive advantage. Why is it, and that's at odds with many of the things that a lot of drone enthusiasts, and you guys use that term in the paper, drone enthusiasts and drone pessimists. Why is it that you guys find that there is not necessarily going to be this advantage that many of the drone enthusiasts talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. So the key aspect is we can divide them in two main views. On the one hand, drones do not change. So when we think about the offense-defense balance, this is a rather simple but still useful way of thinking about modern warfare. That is, does current technology, does the state-of-the-art technology favor offensive operation or defensive operation? So in the realm of air warfare, we can think about the development of radars changing state-of-the-art technology and favoring the defense. Or we can think about stealth technology as doing the very opposite.
Yep.
So do drones have a similar effect that shifts the balance in favor of the offense? And the answer is no. So that is for the very reason I just said.
Yeah.
The introduction of drones technology doesn't change the fact that for modern air defenses, that modern air defenses are an extremely effective and lethal a set of technologies for air operations. This is something we are seeing in Ukraine right now, even for Russia. Penetrating Ukrainian air defense, it is really, really, really difficult and therefore challenging. So drones technology do not change the state of the art. But then we go one step further and we ask, well, even if drones do not shift from defensive advantage to offensive advantage, do they shift the advantage towards the offense? So we can still be in a realm of defensive advantage, but maybe things have shifted only a bit, maybe, but have shifted towards the offense. And in fact, as in this case, drones per se have not changed because the capabilities that drones have, that is, they fly at very low speed, this is not different from what even like some commercial aircraft can do. You know, if you need to fly at low speed, you have other means, or to fly at low altitude. So the finding we have is that they literally do not even shift the balance towards the offense. So not just they don't shift it to offense advantage.
What are some of the key elements that you think are being overlooked in the analysis that's being discussed? So obviously you just mentioned a few of the things, but some of the enthusiasts seem to be having some blind spots when they continue to advocate for this revolutionary shift for advocating for drones. What are some of the blind spots or some of the elements there that they're overlooking when they continue to advocate for the primacy of drones?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the fact that to state-of-the-art modern air defense systems, drones are extremely vulnerable. That is a key limitation. That mm-hmm. is the key argument that have been advanced by drone enthusiasts is rely on key on very selected cases and on partial information. So what some of these people have said is like, oh, look at Libya in 2019, one of the factions using TB2s went on the offense and that was a game changer. Or like the family, the Nagorno-Karabakh, look at Azerbaijan, like kind of this, like in few weeks made, like used these TB2 drones super effectively destroying air defenses, allowing for a ground offense by Azerbaijani, Azeri ground forces. And the thing is, well, yes, but the reality is way more complicated. And this is what we discussed in the other article that you mentioned, the one whose title is Why Drones Have Not Revolutionized War, that is, in these conflicts, we have a mix of either not very good, like kind of obsolete air defenses, so that they were not kind of capable of detecting these drones, or air defenses which did not have updated electronic warfare systems, so they could be very easily blinded by more modern electronic warfare systems by the attacking side, or they were not using air defense system were not used effectively. So we have, for example, Armenia like deploying long range radars to the border, which means that they were very easy prey by anti-radiation missiles. So if your radar can be destroyed, pretty much like if your enemy can poke your eye, and guess what? All of a sudden you're blind and you cannot see the incoming drone. So these people have been using these selected cases and only partial evidence from these cases to say the drones are super effective. I mean, like all technologies can be very effective if used appropriately. And this is what in part happened in some of these cases. But if you use drones per se without any support, that is without proper tactics, concepts of operations, or without electronic warfare support, their effectiveness kind of drops dramatically. And just to emphasize this point that I haven't touch upon much, I'm happy to elaborate further. When I talked about tactics and concept of operations, in Nagorno-Karabakh, what Azerbaijan did is essentially a repetition of what Israel did in 1982 in Libya. That is, back then there weren't stealth fighters. Israel had learned in 1973 that its aircraft were extremely vulnerable to Soviet air defense systems. Like in the 1973 war, Israel lost about 100 aircraft in something like 7 or 10 days. I mean, this was like dramatic amount of losses of aircraft. So Israel spent the following 9 years figuring out how to use in an effective way its fleet of aircraft against very capable Soviet air defenses. And this is what came up in 1982. That is, it used baits, so that is decoys that would have a radar signature very similar to its aircraft. Accordingly, they would be detected by early warning radars. Target acquisition radars, that is the one associated with surface-to-air missiles, would switch on, illuminate the target so to kind of to engage it. Yep. But the moment these radars were switched on, by emitting a radar pulse, they would make themselves visible to suppression assets, and therefore from being hunters, they become hunted themselves. Yep. They became target. And so Israel used this approach to neutralize Syrian air defense in 1982. If you read any kind of summary of the war and then you read the summary of what Azerbaijan did in 2020, it's exactly the same. So, and this is to show how, yeah, if you use these technologies in an effective way, they can be very useful. But again, this is exactly what Israel did 40 years later. So drones per se didn't really change the balance.
That's a really good point. I was actually going to jump to that Nagorno-Karabakh piece in a little bit, because there was another question I was going to ask you. So I'm going to go back to my other question here in a minute. But since you went to that, I was going to hit a point that you made in your why drones have not revolutionized war here real quick. You said at the end of the paper, in sum, drones were not a silver bullet in the Armenia-Azerbaijan conflict in contrast to what many have concluded. And I thought that that was great because I tend to agree with that. I think a lot of people have overhyped that and taken a lot of what occurred there out of context. I think it's, you know, a lot of what happened there was using another analogy to explain it. You had one side fighting with single shot rifles against one side fighting against a force using rapid fire machine guns, you know, and you wonder why, like, one side won hands down and one side, performed quite poorly. The other thing that I think is often overlooked too, right, is this conflict was fought. And it's a term that I've used and I've talked about it on this conflict and I've written about it in a couple of different things, is this idea that it was fought in a fishbowl, right? It was a very small theater, a very contained theater, and the effects of things like drones are amplified in very small theaters. And so something that's done, you know, the effects of drones, the effects of these strikes in a very contained theater seem far greater than if they were done in a very large spread out theater. And so, you know, those strikes, when they're recorded in something that small, they seem very, very great, especially when they're small forces being fought in a small theater. It seems like this grandiose outcome, whereas, like, if you take that and you put it on some greater piece of territory, it's far less of a big deal. And so scale, I think, is important to consider as well. And you can't necessarily, like, to achieve that same level, that same percentage of effect, if you were to apply like that effect in the Russia-Ukraine conflict, for instance, it would require a significant amount of additional resource to generate that same effect. And that's something that's, I don't have the math in front of me, but it would be a significantly high number of, you know, drones and munitions that I don't think anybody right now has on hand to achieve. And so it's just one of those things where we've got to be a bit cautious when we start throwing things around. And I think a lot of people too are awesome making some money off hyping that, you know, and selling books based off saying, you know, look at this, you got 7 seconds to die, you know, now look at my book and buy my book because I've been hyping this thing. And so one of the interesting things to tie back to the question I had asked about the key elements that are being overlooked when we talk about this, I'm interested in your thoughts about swarms, because a lot of people talk about swarms and, you know, how drone swarms are going to be something that we're going to have to contend with in the future. And I'm just interested because they never say what, like, the swarm, but what is it doing? Because all these drones
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
If they have the capability to carry munitions, they have only a finite amount of munitions to carry, right? Because they are, you know, like, they are relatively big, but they're also relatively small. And so they can only carry a few munitions, you know? If they are armed and they're swarming, they're only going to be able to get off so many, you know, strikes before they have to disengage and leave. And if they're not armed, then they're just swarming to do what? You know, to harass, to do constant sensing, you know? And so I'm just curious what your thoughts are on this idea of drone swarms and what drone swarming to do what?
Great question. So we very briefly and only superficially addressed this question in the paper, Will the Drone Always Get Through? When we discuss future capabilities. And so we acknowledge that some people say, drones today do not shift the balance towards the offense or toward offense dominance, but in the future they will. And some people use the argument that swarms will in fact kind of create this effect. So the argument at face value is, I can say, persuasive. You know, so they say, well, you have a massive amount of drones flying in. Any air defense system has a limited number of munition, which means it can engage only a limited number of targets. So if you saturate, meaning you have more incoming drones than the number of missiles or munitions the air defenses have, then someone will always get through. And so there is an advantage. And so some of the point we advance is, well, it depends very much because technological changes affect not only the offense, but also the defense. So, I mean, for example, with electronic warfare systems, that's a quite an unlimited amount of supply. You know, of course, electronic warfare is not a magic touch. It's always very important is localized. So electronic warfare is not something you push a button and all of a sudden you switch off the lights. So it's directional. So you interfere with the electromagnetic with the remote control of these drones, and so you need to take care one by one. But in this is something that exists. And then, like we say, there are also other type of technological changes. For example, remotely positioned anti-artillery guns. So you can, for high-value targets, you can place multiple of these, and the amount of munitions, these short-range artillery guns, of course, this is the last kind of last measure for point defense of high-value targets, but these have a high number of munitions. And when you think that munitions of anti-artillery guns, the modern one, have this very effective munition that essentially opens up as a cloud of tungsten. So this is going to do structural damage, and therefore just a couple of bullets can be sufficient to, if not destroy, but to kind of structurally damage an incoming drone, so you understand how many they can take down. So, and of course, there are other advances. For example, people point to high energy lasers. Of course, high energy lasers have limitation. You need to have a high supply of energy generations, they are fixed. So there are a couple of things. So what we say is that we cannot reach any definitive conclusion about this. We do not have crystal ball to look into the future. But if you consider how technological change is going to advance the offense, you should also consider how technological change is going to strengthen the defense. So a proper assessment would require that. And in this regard, to answer your question, though, I would refer to a really great article that came out very recently, I think in the past 2 months, by Anthony King, who wrote it in Journal of Strategic Studies, and is an extremely accessible article written for, you do not need to have any background on air defense or anything, and that's what I love about that article. He takes essentially all the claims and then discusses them. And for example, he says the argument about drones is that you're going to have this huge wave of drones coming. But it points out, as you were mentioning, even drones that carry munition but carry explosive. Yeah. So it is, rather than drones, we talk about something like close to missiles or FPV drones nowadays. It starts, well, these drones, to be small, they are going to have a short range. So if they have short range, their effect is going to be mostly at the tactical level.
Yep.
And then Anthony says, but this is where people say that we are going to have a mothership that carries all these drones to theater, and then it deploys, and then they carry out this attack. And then Anthony replies saying, yeah, but this means you can take down the mothership. So he goes in point by point, kind of mentioning how this idea that it is a magic weapon that all of a sudden is going to make air defense system obsolete, when you Lucidian scrutiny is way, way weaker than at face value. So in this regard, I would suggest for in the listeners who are interested, that article is probably doesn't provide the last word, but is definitively a good correction in the debate about swarms.
Yeah, it's good that you bring that up. I'd have to look at my calendar when this episode is going to air, but the Tony King article that you mentioned is on the episode that aired yesterday, so for April. And so he's actually on the episode from yesterday, for April's episode, talking nice. About that article. So it's timely that we're recording this on 5 April. That article is being discussed on the episode yesterday. So you got to get on there and listen to that one.
Absolutely.
Because he talks about it, and it's a really good one. And he talks about a lot about this. So season 3 is the what's the right phrase here? Drone hater series.
Okay, nice.
I'm kidding. I'm not classifying you as a drone hater. But with that said, I guess we'll get to this question. For people out there that might say that you're a drone hater or a naysayer about drones and that you don't get drones and that you're missing the boat, what would you say your role is as it relates to the debate on drones as they pertain to war and warfare and the future of war and warfare?
Some people have taken,
I've seen the journals. I know some people have taken issue with your position.
Yeah, so I'm not a drone hater. I don't have any strong feeling towards drones per se. I was just curious. My personality is that when everybody agrees on something, probably there's a reason to investigate more in depth, and things are probably a bit more complicated than what many believe. So that's the basic point. And when investigating more in depth these topics, which meant, as I mentioned earlier, digging into textbook of radar engineering, electromagnetic backscattering, and radar filtering. So what we found out was, in fact, as I said, that things are indeed more complicated than people believed. I think drones very important capabilities. The persistent surveillance, the idea during the war on terror, the fact that you can have an aircraft in the sky for 24, 48 hours, even more, and really track terrorists to figure out when they are going to hide or track them so that you can strike them at the most, at the best moment, that is to minimize kind of collateral damage or to strike when there are congregated with other terrorists. I mean, this is absolutely critical capability that 30 years ago did not exist.
Oh, yeah.
But that these drones have been very effective in the to fight terrorists in Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iraq, Yemen, doesn't mean that the capability to translate one-to-one in a high-intensity conventional warfare. And this is, in fact, you mentioned earlier, Ukraine. This is what we have seen. That is, early in the war in Ukraine, there was all these fads, all this attention towards the TB2. Like, I remember there were money being collected online to donate TB2s to Ukraine. And I was like, what is this about? This doesn't make any sense. I had journalists asking me, what do you think drones are going to be the big game changer? I was like, no. And then they were pointed to me how TB2s that destroyed, that kind of accumulated significant kills of tanks. Look, I don't know what's going on in the ground. There's only two reasons I can think of. Either Russian columns are advancing without air coverage, or Ukraine is deploying electronic warfare system to blind Russian radars so that it can strike these columns. So my thought was, I don't know which of the two is true, but the idea that with drones you're going to essentially stop the Russian advance by itself seems to be a bit strong. And in fact, this is what we saw, that these drones were effective. I talked with Rob Lee recently. He told me that most of the footage about the TB2 was actually the very first days of the conflict. So that's I think he has something coming up about this very topic. But even if that had been longer, like the effect of these drones that was mostly in detecting coming columns, the strike was mostly then artillery. So, I mean, which is still great, but things already changed. And in any case, think about the paradox. That is, for the previous 5 years, people had told us how drones were these marvelous offensive weapons, and then we discovered that, in fact, are actually an effective defensive system. This is turns completely the rhetoric on its head. And most of all, the moment the war shifted towards a kind of very clear defensive lines in the Donbas and in Crimea, the drones, these drones, the TB2, completely disappears. There are were a couple of really interesting interviews in Foreign Policy, Defense News, and a couple of other outlets that interviewed Ukrainian drone pilots. And they said, look, with 90% probability, one of these drones is going to be shot down over two missions. And he said, we don't need the Grey Eagle. We don't need these even more expensive drones because we're going to lose them. Like the Russian air defenses now are positioned. There's nothing we can do.
Yeah.
To me, well, that speaks loud about the argument that drones had kind of changed the war and they were making offensive operation easy. So that's pretty telling.
It's a damning, indictment almost of where the state of drones are. A couple comments on what you were saying too. I started this podcast almost exactly in line with what you were saying there at the beginning when I asked you the question that I asked you that got you going there. The idea that when everybody agrees, we need to start questioning things, that's foundational with a lot of, you know, what I believe and why I write a lot of the things that I write. And it's not that it's to be provocative for provocative sake, but to help improve the state of Western military thinking, Western military thought, right? To help improve where we're at in the world in terms of how we think about things. Because again, like if everybody starts thinking the same things, we're probably stepping into traps inadvertently. Not because we're intentionally trying to make mistakes. And so it's good to, and I say this not with any kind of verbose bad attitude with it, but it's good to try and shock the system awake every now and then. And so that's why I think papers like this, like the two that you've written, are good because they do inject some shock in the dialogue, you know. And it's not shock for shock's sake, but it's good, like, hey, you know, maybe we're not asking the right questions. And I think these are really good papers for that. Some of the early people that are like, hey, you know, this stuff's revolutionary, it seems like they almost, instead of saying, hey, maybe I was wrong and I need to take a step back, it's almost like they double down at a point and they're like, maybe I was wrong. You know, they're whispering off to the side to a buddy, but they're like, nah, I can't publicly say that. I got to double down and keep pushing this idea and make even grander and grander statements on how this has revolutionized things. And so this is a weird situation where factually, like empirically, you can look and see that, like you said, you know, I had Mike Coffin on the podcast at the beginning of the season a couple episodes ago, and he said the same thing you just said. He said, like, drones are all but like doing almost nothing. He said cyber operations on the front are basically neutralizing almost everything to include drones, you know. And so it's just this interesting thing, but you still have people writing these things and making these assertions about how drones are, you know, still the end all be all of warfare, you know, and they're the future of war and all this. And so it'll just be interesting to see where the arguments continue to go moving forward. At the end of the day, I think it's this argument that I've been making that makes people uncomfortable because we still don't want to admit this, but like, I think, and again, I'm not being parochial here, but I still think it takes a land force to beat a land force. You know, at the end of the day, you can't stand off warfare, you know, trying to defeat an army with drones from thousands of feet in the air, from, you know, thousands of miles away, not thousands of miles away, but miles away isn't going to work. You still have to get in there, dig them out, you know. Like, Ukraine isn't going to beat the Russian army with drones stood off from, you know, a long way away. They're going to have to get in there and dig them out. And it's going to be a tough, hard fight. And that's just the unfortunate realities of warfare. And then the other thing that I think is important, and this is another point that I've been trying to make lately when I talk to people on some and some of the things I've been writing, this idea, and this is, I think, it's like a fundamental truth, you know, and this is where I think the idea that drones aren't revolutionary, like it's just another tool in the kit bag. It's not revolutionary because it's just another way of attacking from above, right? And the idea of attacking from above has been around forever. And so if you just take the idea, take drone out of it and say attacking from above, right? What happens when you attack from above? The people on the ground go underground, generally speaking, right? They go into trenches, they go into bunkers, they seek refuge from the attack from above. They go into urban areas, right? This dynamic has existed for a long time, ever since you've been able to attack from above. And so when you take drone, that term, out of it, you know, and just say, okay, taking the technology aspect out, putting in attack from above, you know, very, very general thing, and then apply that, and then you think about the forces on the ground, attack from above, they're going to go underground in some capacity. What happens then, right? Generally speaking, a static line develops. And so this scenario that's developed in Ukraine, for instance, like, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize that, like, a static line's probably going to end up developing, you know? And so as we think through the future of war, and the more we try to invest, and I would say thinking about Western militaries trying to invest more in drones and de-invest in land forces, if you think through the dynamic of how that concept of operations is going to unfold, if we do find ourselves, Western militaries, fighting more with drones and less with land forces, but fighting forces that still have land forces, you're going to find more static attritional wars developing, which is actually contrary to what we want. So you're going to create this paradox, but you're going to have not have the land forces that you're going to need to actually go in and do the thing you need to do, which is clear out that land force. And so you're going to create this whole huge problem that you didn't foresee. And so anyway, these are the nerdy things that papers like the ones that you've written, co-authored, really get me thinking about. So anyway, with all that said, is there anything else on these two papers? Is there anything else about drones or anything that I just said that you'd like to comment on before we break here?
Let me just add a very, very short comment on the being a questioning assumption. I think that to me, if I want to single out an aspect that come out of really this really interesting conversation, so thanks again for the invitation, is how important this is. In the Silicon Valley, they have a sentence that is always questioning your assumption. Like John Boyd, with whom I disagree on many things at one point, he said, we need to question assumption because assumption becomes dogma. People start accepting it and take it for true, for like as fact, something that is not fact. And this leads to the very last point you made. I mean, in the last, in the late 2010s, I was reading people saying, oh, we need to invest more on drones for a kind of bordering defense, for like as a way to both deterrence, effective deterrence, and effective defense, and especially effective defense. And now, thank God, nobody took that suggestion seriously, because think if countries had kind of reduced armed forces, like ground forces size, in favor of just increasing the fleet of these drones, the countries would now have some serious problems. And so this is why often people are kind of criticize the military for being conservative, for being slow in adapting change. This is what I say often, I reply often to people. I'm like, yeah, the problem is that for any brilliant Einstein you might have, you have 99 people with crazy ideas that if we listen to them, we would be worse off. And so this is why organizations are conservative, because they don't want to allow the first crazy to come and implement change, and then we are worse off. So I've read, like over the past 10 years, I've read so many criticisms of the U.S. Air Force, the Army, whatever, all fair. I mean, I've never, I'm not American, so I've never been in the U.S. Military. I'm sure some of these criticisms are correct, but again, has the U.S. military been better off by not following many of these suggestions, or is it better off, right? So to me, that at the end of the day is the important thing to keep in mind.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. There's all sorts of wacky ass ideas that float around on a daily basis. But anyway, so with that, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much. I hope the me slapping my desk didn't get picked up by the mic. Anyway, so Mero, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. It's been a fantastic conversation, and I appreciate you chatting with me today.
Oh, thanks again for having me. It was really, really great.
Thank you for listening to the Revolution in Military Affairs podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you would share this on social media. We would also appreciate it if you would provide us a rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. These ratings help new listeners find the podcast. Thank you.